Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello, welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the world of wine investment. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by Martin Brzezinski, who is an investment advisor at WineCap. Martin, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, Jonathan. It's nice to be here. I'm looking forward to a conversation with you.
Indeed, as I preparing for this podcast and looking at the world of wine at the moment, there's some interesting developments and looking at some of the notes here, we're going to be discussing some of the most popular vintages a little bit later on in the podcast. And that's something that I'm going to find particularly interesting. Before we get into it, Martin, please would you be able to give us an introduction to yourself as well as WineCap, please?
Of course. So I've been involved in wine and wine investing for the thick end of 15 years. I fell into it a little bit by accident. I've spent all that time in wine investing. I've been mostly in and around procurement analysis and then account management. I've spent an awful lot of time looking at data to help clients make better decisions about the wines that they're buying.
Fantastic, thank you. So a little bit about WineCap. So you've been in the industry for 15 years. How long have you been at WineCap for, and what does WineCap specialise in?
So WineCap have been around for just getting over a decade. We are a wine investment specialist. You don't really come to us to buy wine to drink. Our vision is to be the world's number one partner for wine investment and preserving wine for future generations. We want to give our clients access to the wonder of wine as a sustainable and a stable asset class.
Fantastic. So let's set the scene now, if we may, Martin, and look at, you know, how wine investment has evolved over the past 20 or so years, because of course it's something that has become increasingly popular, especially over the last decade. And it would be good if you could sort of mention, you know, in the day of digital access to information and trends, how that's had an impact on the industry.
Sure. So wine investing has been around for donkey's years, but it started to be a bit more formalized in the 1990s. Prior to that, there's a very long, very well-established tradition of people who are buying wines like this to drink, buying multiple cases, and at the point where they start to drink them, to sell one or two of the cases that they've bought, and the money raised from the wines they're selling funds the wines that they're drinking. So that's how wine investment started. And then really in the mid to late 1990s, you started to see that happen a little bit more formally at big wine merchants and with wine investment specialists. That's the origin, is buying multiple cases with a view to selling a portion to fund your drinking down the line. And the big change for wine investing really is sort of at the turn of the century, turn of the millennium, when you saw the founding of companies like Livex and WineSearcher, who are data providers and marketplaces. WineSearcher is a tool that people can use to look up wine pricing. I should say, we have similar tools, a tool called WineTrack, which is a great wine discovery tool. If you're interested in wine investing, you should absolutely be looking at that. But Livex and WineSearcher pointed the way forward. More data, more visibility, easier transactions, and a much more open market. And they're part of that ecosystem where people who are investing in wine today have access to vastly more information than they did 15, 20 years ago. That's really been the biggest change.
Martin, now let's start looking at, you know, the individual wines, if we may. So there's you know, sort of looking out there and looking at LiveX, you know, one would maybe traditionally associate wine with regions such as Bordeaux. That's simply not the case anymore in terms of the investment perspective. So it would be good to get a little bit more in the way of insight in terms of, you know, what are the most popular wines been recently? What are the hot regions at the moment? And some of the vintages that WineCap are particularly excited about currently.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jonathan, to say that the wine market has moved beyond Bordeaux. I mean, to give you a bit of historical context, as recently as 2010, 96% of all the trading on LiveX was in Bordeaux wine. If you were investing in wine in anywhere between the 1990s and the mid-2000s, the vast majority of it would have been Bordeaux. You know, 90%, 95% would have been Bordeaux, and of that, 80 to 90% would have been the Bordeaux first growths. That has changed so much in the last 10 years. We're now in a place where, while total trade in Bordeaux has doubled since 2010, as a region, it's now only about 40, 45% of the market, depending on, you know, from one month to another. We've had really significant growth in the trading volume of other regions. So Burgundy, Champagne, and Tuscan wine in particular, but you've had massive growth in Piedmont wine, California wine, all these other regions that make up the broader ecosystem.
Fantastic. So this is a question that may give a little bit more insight into how WineCap works. So, you know, when you're working with your clients in terms of providing the wine, is it a case that you're seeing a lot of pull from investors in terms of them coming to you and asking for certain wine, certain vintages, and, you know, it'll be interesting to hear what those particular vintages are? Or is it a case that, you know, with your expertise, you're seeing the trends out there in the market, you're seeing what's working from an investment perspective, and then that's something that you're then providing information on to your clients? And again, you know, if that's something that's really sort of driving the relationship, what are the wines that you're looking at the moment specifically?
That's a great question. Most of our clients are not particularly well-versed in wine investing. Almost a lot of them are wine lovers. And they do generally come to us for our expertise and our recommendations. That being said, you know, yes, if a client is specifically after a portfolio that's got vastly more Barolo in than we would normally look at, then, you know, of course, we'll accommodate that. But always with the understanding that what we want for our clients is to have a broad portfolio exposure to multiple regions in multiple vintages and at different price points too. So in terms of, you've asked, like, what are the hot vintages, what are the hot regions? We've had a massive increase in demand over the last 2 or 3 years for Burgundian wine and for Champagne. That's been a big focus for the market. At the moment, that's started to ease off a little bit. But I think particularly in Champagne, there's a huge amount of growth left to be seen over the next 10 years. I think that'd be a really interesting sector to watch. I think Piedmont is another really interesting sector to watch for investors. It's got a lot of similar attributes to Burgundy in that there are loads of producers who make many different wines, which isn't, it's quite a stark contrast to Bordeaux, where a producer probably makes only 2 or 3 different wines. In Piedmont, producers might make 10 or 20 different wines. That difference explains some of the market dynamics. And like I said, it's the same in Burgundy, that you get that trend going on. And we've had a preponderance recently of really high quality vintages as well. You know, in Champagne, we've had releases of 2012 and 2008 relatively recently, although Champagne's a little different. The releases are staggered over a number of years, depending on which producer you're looking at. But same in Bordeaux, we've had a number of really strong vintages recently, 19, 20, 22, 18 as well, all really high quality vintages. And I'll come back to that in a bit when we talk about which vintages we're really looking at right now. But we've had a lot of good vintages recently, and it means there's a lot of good wine out there to choose from when it comes to investment.
Thank you. So, I mean, I think as you mentioned there, a logical next step would be to actually delve down into some of these vintages, if we may, Martin. You know, what are the ones that are particularly interesting for you at the moment?
I think in Bordeaux, there's a really interesting dynamic at the moment. So we had 18, 19, 20, a triumvirate of really good vintages. 21 was strong, but not as good. And then 22 is another exceptional vintage. But what we saw was that the prices that were initially offered from the producers were 20, 30, 40% in some instances above the values of those other recent great vintages. That's a really interesting market dynamic for us, looking at it from an investment point of view. We're already hearing Bordeaux talk about 2023 as a small but very good vintage. It's clear to us that the winemakers are trying to set a new baseline price for new releases of Bordeaux. They're highly unlikely, and they very rarely bring prices down year on year. There's like a constant ratcheting escalator of pricing. And to us, that difference between 22 and 2019-18, that's a real opportunity. Those wines are fantastic. The late teen vintages, they're really strong vintages, but they are on average, 25% discount to 2022. We don't see any scope for 23, 24, 25 coming much down in prices on release. So you think there's a great opportunity for investors and drinkers as well to pick up wines now that we think are only going to become more expensive to buy in years to come.
That's a very interesting point that you make there, that the producers are ratcheting up the price each year, and there's very little in the way of it coming down from the production side of things in terms of price. So, you know, that by itself does put some inflationary pressures on the price of wine going forward, which is an interesting point. But it'd be good now, Martin, if we could speak a little bit about the landscape in terms of the factors driving wine prices at the moment. You know, what are the big events happening out there in the fine wine market that are driving returns for investors?
Well, wine is interesting because while there are events that drive pricing, the dynamics that mean that wine prices go up over time are intrinsic to the wine itself. It's not so much, you know, we can all point to, you know, China opening up to fine wine in the late 2000s, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. You can point to that and see the correlating rise in market pricing. But I think it's worth taking half a step back and understanding that the dynamic that underpins the wine market isn't about what's going on now. It's about the fact that wine gets rarer as it ages and wine gets better as it ages. And those are really unusual for any investment class, particularly the fact that wine gets better as it ages. You know, the art that you have on your wall that you might buy for investment, the classic car that you have in your drive that might be an investment too, the home that you live in, you know, these things don't get better over time. They get worse and they cost you money to keep up in good condition. Wine's completely unique in that regard. And when you understand, you know, when you put your investor's hat on rather than your drinker's hat, when you understand that dynamic, it explains so much about the long-term trends of the wine market, why we see, generally speaking, very consistent growth, why the growth is quite low risk, why the market dynamics tend not to see steep falls in pricing, and all markets have corrections from time to time, but wine tends not to see the same volatility that you get in other asset classes. So before we speak about like events that move the market, I think it's really important to understand that background that's at the core of everything we do. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
So in terms of like the events that might be affecting the market over the next few years, you know, we know that there's increasing interest in wine from emerging markets. We've got a great model from the expansion in demand from China 10 or so years ago. You know, we're always hearing about trade negotiations between the EU and India, which has huge potential for the wine market, but there's many a slip twixt cup and lip on that front, so we'll see what happens. And there's always the climate change thing that's going on in the background as well. You know, we know we're getting more extreme weather events. We know that impacts on wine production, which ultimately then has an impact on the performance of wine as an investment. So we can think of fires in Napa Valley are a perfect example of this. You know, we've just had, we're in the midst of a season of autumn releases from the negociants in Bordeaux, but the autumn releases tend not to be French wine. And we've just had the release of Opus One, which is one of the most important California wines for the market. And they've not released any 2020 because thanks to fires and all the smoke taint that came down in their patch of Napa as a result, their production level is like 10% of a normal vintage, and it doesn't look like they'll release it at all. So if you think about standard models of supply and demand, you know, if you've got a vintage missing, well, that's an interesting opportunity for investors right there, don't you think? I certainly do. And we see, you know, we see similar things. We had frosts and hail in Burgundy a couple of years ago, you know, ruining a vintage pretty much. That has an impact on price. So it's always worth keeping an eye on that kind of the weather impact on the wine market. And climate change is just something that the wine market is dealing with. Wine producers are absolutely dealing with it. And it's going to have further impacts over the next 10 years. I think that's probably the key takeaway in terms of external impacts on the wine market. But yeah, you know, new demand coming to the market is certainly there. Emerging markets in the Far East are something that everyone's got their eye on at the moment.
So in terms of the price there, Martin, it sounds like there's the increasing demand for it, and at the same time, unfortunately, due to climate change and weather events, the supply is being diminished. So of course, from an investment perspective, that will be supportive of the price. So, you know, people listening to this, Martin, that are thinking, okay, this sounds interesting, but have no idea of how to get involved in investment in wine. Now, how difficult is it to get into? You know, well, what do people need to do? What do they need to get prepared for? You know, in terms of storage, is that something they have to do themselves? You know, how does it work from that perspective?
So you've got lots of options, but obviously anyone who's interested in wine should start by talking to us before they speak to anyone else. I joke, but there are loads of people out there who will be happy to talk to your listeners about wine and wine investing. In terms of things that you really do need to know before you get started, the critical one for me is that you need to be comfortable with the fact that wine isn't a trading investment. You're not going to be buying it today and selling it in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months. You need to have a long view. We always tell our clients that they should be thinking about wine that you buy today, you're going to hold for at least 5 years. And ideally, you've got a 10-year horizon for any wine that you buy today. That's the key thing that I would want people to take away with them. In terms of storage, anyone that you're speaking to about wine investing should be able to manage the storage and insurance for you. That would be the expectation. If you want to store yourself, there are options that you can do for that. You know, UK bonded storage is the global gold standard for storing your wine. You know, when I speak to people who are based overseas, it's always the idea that the UK is cold, it's wet, and tectonically nothing happens here. So it's the perfect place to store wine. And that's why the UK has billions and billions of pounds worth of wine in storage facilities all over the country. And wine storage shouldn't be expensive either. You know, you should be expecting a cost of about £15 per year for a case of 12 bottles, which, you know, when cases can run to easily to £5,000, you know, it's a small fraction of the value of the wine. Other things you should have in your mind: how much you want to invest, you know, what your risk appetite's like, because that will dictate to an extent the sort of wines you look at. You know, my preference is always for a broad spread and a relatively low end risk. But if you want to take risk with your wine portfolio, there are things that you can do to get that. And you should have an idea of the kind of growth that you're likely to see. We reasonably expect to see growth rates around 8% a year for a portfolio. For individual wines, pardon me, for individual wines, that can obviously vary quite a lot. But 8% growth is kind of where the market's been at for the long term. And that means that you can roughly expect to see the value of your wines double every 10 years, which is a really appealing growth rate, particularly given low volatility and low risk.
Martin, a question that I have is, you know, yes, somebody invests in wine and they store it for 10 years, great. And, you know, the market value is what it is over that period. But then what do they do in terms of selling it? Because, you know, if the buyer's in India, as you mentioned, or China for these high-end wines, you know, what's the process then for them to exit their investments?
Well, with someone like WineCap, we manage that whole process. So we're here to help clients every step of the way, from the first inquiry to the last wine they're selling. So our clients don't have to worry about the process of selling the wine themselves. We will manage that process for them. We'll give them an expectation of prices. But again, you know, it's not something that happens overnight. You know, it takes longer than you might be used to with like equities and bonds to sell cases of wine. But if you're patient and you have the right approach, you can make very good money. You know, the ideal is always to sell at retail pricing. But our clients own their wine, so if they have greater need of urgent liquidity, there are other options available.
Fantastic. So, I mean, just one last point on that. You know, when you're managing that sale, I mean, is that to sort of end users, other investors? What does that look like?
Well, it can be anything. You know, if there's still an investable life left in that wine, you'll find demand from the market and from other wine investors for it. You know, when we talk about accessing the retail price, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're selling it to someone who's going to drink it. It just means that, you know, that's the price it costs to buy the wine. The sort of wines we're looking at, particularly if we look at young wines, they have a lifespan that can be 30, 40 years. So, you know, if you're buying 2019, 2020 Bordeaux today and you sell in 10 years, it's still a pretty young wine in the scheme of things. So the lifespan goes on and on. Ultimately, at the end of the line with any wine that you buy is someone who wants to drink it.
Great, thank you. So just to finish off now, Martin, you know, for people listening to this that are, you know, thinking about it, maybe looking at wine investment previously, what would you say are the key things to bear in mind when looking for wine? You know, first of all, from vintages, you know, which regions to be looking at, and then, you know, some, now, maybe a couple of key points about the actual process. What should they bear in mind?
So if someone wants to get started in wine investing, here are the things that I would be wanting them to do. Go and have a look at the data that's out there. Go and have a look at reports from WineCap and other people. Go and have a look at our wine tracker tool, which is a fantastic tool for discovering wines that are viable for investment. Absolutely invaluable tool. Go and have a look at and talk to different people. You know, obviously I want everyone to come and do business with us, but there are other providers out there, and you should speak to a number of them at least. Make sure that you have a broad portfolio. You don't want to have a portfolio in 2023 that is just one region, just a couple of different cases. You know, you want to have that spread, but equally you don't want to be too out there. You know, you don't want a portfolio that is just Margaret River wine or just, you know, wine from Alsace. You need to focus in on where the market's at. So you're thinking Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, Piedmont, Tuscany, and Napa will probably make up the vast majority of your portfolio. There's absolutely room for other things. You know, if you've got a reasonably big portfolio, then sure, there's room to have some Chilean wine or some Australian wine in there. But the context is important. It needs to be those core regions where the liquidity lies, where we have the data that means we can make good decisions about the wines that we're buying and the vintages that we're buying.
Fantastic. Thank you. And what we're going to do, anybody listening to this that would like to use the wine tracker that Martin mentioned there, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to that. Do check that out. It's very interesting in terms of the last 12 months, some of the rises, some of the fallers. It will add a bit of context to what Martin's just explained there in terms of the movement out there. You can see some of those regions that are doing very well, some of those vintages that are doing well, and those obviously that aren't doing so well as well. So it really does highlight that point that you make there, Martin, there are winners and there are losers within this market. So that's a very interesting tool to use. We'll also have a link through to WineCap's guide to investing in wine as well. Do download that. That has an awful lot of information in it. So Martin, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It's been a pleasure to be here.
And do check out, everyone who's listening, the Wine Tracker. That's particularly interesting, a very good tool. So do check that out. And thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.